Let's read verses 1 and 2 from James chapter 4. What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? You lust and do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. Was James overstating the case when he connects lust and envy to murder here in verses 1 and 2? While our instinct might be to say, yeah, maybe he was a bit over the top, we probably should resist that because he's actually on target. Think about children and how two boys can be playing and surrounded by toys, but then they both decide that they want one toy, one because the other one is playing with it. And so they fight over that toy, and it becomes very ugly very quickly. Of course, they get over it quickly, but still, that's how children react to one another and fight over things when there's envy or jealousy over a particular toy that the other child has. But of course, that's children, right? Adults never, ever, ever do that, right? And I see some smiles out there. Well, no, they do. Parents do, adults do it just as bad as children. We just get better at hiding it sometimes. If you want to see it explode in a group of adults, and you want to see them act envious in all its ugliness, watch an aged parent die and children fight over stuff. I saw it when my dad's parents died, when my grandparents died in the 90s, back in 1995. And it got ugly. That's the family. There were 9 kids. All of them were still alive, and they divided almost exactly in half. It got so ugly that my dad only wanted one thing. He wanted a clock that had been over the mantle of their fireplace for years, and somebody swept it off and onto the floor and busted it up. And my uncle, who dearly loved, he's since passed as well, but lovingly put it back together for my dad and gave it to him as a gift. It's still in the house somewhere, or still somewhere. I'm not sure who has it now. But anyway, there was just ugliness. And of course, you know, I could stand back, because I lived in Florida at the time, and I could stand back and watch it from a distance and see the division and be very judgmental and holier than them, because I wasn't concerned about any of that stuff. It meant nothing to me. I had grown up with and spent so much time around my grandparents. I had the memories of their love and care with me that I carried with me. So I didn't care about that. So it wasn't an issue for me. But I saw the ugliness of envy and anger personally and firsthand in 2016 when my dad died in myself. I didn't want anything. I didn't care anything about anything in the house except my dad's pistol. He had a pistol, and I wanted it. I had been wanting it, and we had gone out and shot it together, and so it meant something to me, and I wanted it. And my brother-in-law had been driving the truck, a dad's truck, and he said thought it was somewhere in the truck, and we couldn't find it. I felt myself getting angry with my brother-in-law, Joe, over this gun that we couldn't find. And I thought, you let somebody steal it or something. I was getting mad at him, but we kept looking and kept looking. And then finally, I found it in their house in a place that I had looked earlier, just not well enough. And I kept digging deeper and deeper till we found it. And then I felt ashamed of myself for being so angry over this nothing. Now, Joe's life was never in danger, because I wasn't going to shoot him when I found it. But my soul was, because I was driven by anger and bitterness over the fact that I thought that this gun that I had wanted had been lost and given to somebody else. Well, tonight, as we return to Faith's Hall of Shame, we want to look at just one Bible example, Joseph's brothers and the shame of envy. And as we look at their life story, we're going to see three specific things. We're just going to kind of unfold the story in three ways. We're going to look at the cause, the cost, and the conclusion. We're going to look at the cause of their envy, the cost of that envy, and then the conclusion will be, as we wrap it up, how God used that for something better, for something much greater than what they intended it for. Well, when you think about the cause goes all the way back to Jacob's sin of stealing his brother's birthright and having to flee to Uncle Laban in Haran. You remember the story? Stealing the birthright and the blessing. He had gotten the blessing, then he stole or the birthright. Then he stole the blessing, and then he persuaded. And the way he did it was when they found out that Isaac was going to bless his brother Esau, that he and his mother cooked up the scheme of lying to Isaac, who was blind, and for Jacob to pretend to be Esau so he could also get the blessing. And as a result of that, Esau was so angry, he was going to kill his brother as soon as dad died. And so we know that how that unfolded. That's how that unfolded. Then we also, if we will, remember that when he arrived in Haran, where his uncle Laban was, he met his cousin Rachel and fell head over heels in love with her. So much so that he offered himself in 7 years of service to his uncle Laban for her hand in marriage. But you'll also remember how Laban, who was as deceitful as his nephew, or even more so, cheated him out of another 7 years of labor by giving him his older daughter, Leah, first. Jacob had no interest in Leah, but he got her anyway. And as a result of this, there was a dual marriage where you had Jacob married to two girls who were sisters. And so there was a lot of competition and a lot of strife within that household as a result of that. In fact, it led to a lifetime, decades of jealousy and envy. Jealousy and envy that began with the fact that Leah was having children and Rachel, the favored wife, was not. Turn back to Genesis chapter 29. And we're just going to read through some passages here in Genesis chapters 29 and 30 and then in chapter 37. So we're going to be in Genesis for the rest of our time tonight. But as we read through the story, I want you to just kind of pick up on some things that we see here that are going on in this household now that Jacob has these two wives. This is beginning in Genesis chapter 29. Let's read and begin verse 30. Genesis 29, verse 30. So Jacob went unto Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah. It said more than Leah. We're going to find out that more is not descriptive enough for how much more he loved her. And he served with Laban for another 7 years. Now, verse 31. Now the Lord saw that Leah was unloved. So it wasn't so much that he loved her less than he just didn't like her, didn't love her, had no real affection for her. And as a result, God opened her womb, but Rachel, the favored wife, was barren. Verse 32. Leah conceived and bore a son and named him Reuben. For she said, because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband will love me. Then she conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. And she named him, Simeon. She conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons. Therefore he was named Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, this time I will praise the Lord. Therefore, she named him Judah. Then she stopped bearing. So she has these four sons, and Rachel has none. But I want you to notice what she's saying with the birth of each of this child. Look at what is going on in her mind and in her heart. She realizes that not only is Rachel loved more, but Jacob really doesn't love her. Verse 31. Now the Lord saw that Leah was unloved. Verse 32. Because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband will love me. Verse 33. Because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. Verse 34. Now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons. Verse 35. This time I will praise the Lord. You notice that the progression there is that, first of all, she says, okay, now that I'm having a child, having his son, he'll love me. Then she says, the next thing she says, well, the Lord has seen my affliction, has heard that I'm loved, and so he heard me, he gives me this son. Then verse 34, now maybe he will be attached to me. You notice the difference in language. It goes from she wants to be loved to, hey, maybe he'll just like me. Maybe he'll have some affection for me instead of being disinterested and having no concern for me at all other than as the woman who keeps producing his children. And then finally, after the fourth one, she's given up. I'm just going to praise the Lord. Just praise that God has given me children. I don't have a husband who loves me. Not only then is this, so this is creating a mindset of bitterness and resentment between Leah and her sister Rachel. A bitterness and resentment that is going to spill over into the hearts and minds of these boys as they begin to grow. Now let's go on in verse chapter 30. This led to a competition. Now Rachel's had it. Her ugly stepsister that she doesn't like is having all these babies by her husband, and she's not having any. In verse 1 of chapter 30. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she became jealous of her sister. So you got the sister who's jealous for her husband's love, and the sister who's jealous for her sister's productivity. And she said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. A little dramatic, shall we say, but also prophetic. Verse 2, then Jacob's anger burned against Rachel. So he got mad. And he said, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? And so now the competition starts. He says, okay, if I can't have children, my maid will have sons and they'll be mine. They'll be my surrogate children. Verse 3, here's my maid Bilhah. Go into her that she may bear on my knees that through her I too may have children. So she gave him her maid Bilhah as a wife, and Jacob went into her. Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, God has vindicated me and has indeed heard my voice and has given me a son. Now she's claiming this child is hers. Therefore she named him Dan. Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. So Rachel said, with mighty wrestling I have wrestled with my sister. Shades of the wrestling that Jacob is going to be doing with the angel of God later on. And I have indeed prevailed, and she named him Naphtali. And now you see the competition is taking off. When Leah, verse 9, saw that she had stopped bearing, she took her maid Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as a wife. Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, how fortunate, and she named him Gad. So now as far as she's concerned, she has five sons now for Jacob. Then verse 12, Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, happy am I, for women will call me happy. So she named him Asher. So she's given up on having any love or affection from her husband. She's not having any more children. So her maid has these children, and Rachel's maid has those children. And so now there are eight sons of Jacob. And there is nothing but envy and jealousy and strife permeating this house. You want to talk about an unhealthy environment or a dysfunctional family? This is a family that is not going to... Now, the boys may unite because they know that their moms are not favored by their dad. Dad doesn't really care about them as much as he cares about Rachel, his favorite wife. And it got so bad that they began to fight over who got to sleep with Jacob. Look in chapter 30 again, now down in verse 14. So now in the days of wheat harvest, Reuben went and found mandrakes in the field and thought that this would be something that would make her fertile and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said to her, is it a small matter for you to take my husband? So this is Leah's mindset. Rachel, sis, you stole my husband. Going all the way back to how Laban cheated in the first place. You stole my husband. So in her mindset, I'm having all these children, but Rachel has stolen his heart. She doesn't have his heart. She has no love, no affection from him. And then verse 15, and would you take my son's mandrakes also? So Rachel said, therefore, he may lie with you tonight and return for your son's mandrakes. Verse 16, when Jacob came in from the field in the evening, then Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come in to me, For I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes. So he lay with her that night, and God gave heed to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. So this is child number nine, boy number nine. They're fighting over affection of this man who's given it all to Rachel and none to Leah. Then in verse 18, then Leah said, God has given me my wages because I gave my maid to my husband, so she named him Issachar. Then Leah conceived again and bore a sixth son to Jacob. Then Leah said, God has endowed me with a good gift. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. And so she still wants affection and love for her husband. She's jealous of her sister because she has all the love despite having these six children of her own and then two others from through her maid. And then she named him Zebulun. And then verse 21, afterwards she bore a daughter and named her Dinah. And so she has seven children in all, in total, for Jacob, who does not love her. So what do you think all seven of these children grow up knowing? They grow up knowing dad doesn't love mom. Dad doesn't love her. He loves stepmom Rachel more than my mom. And what is that going to produce? Envy and jealousy and resentment. Finally, though, God gives Rachel a child. This is in chapter 30 and verse 22. Then God remembered Rachel, and God gave heed to her and opened her womb. So she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. And then she named him Joseph. But I want you to notice at the end of verse 24, she's not satisfied. May the Lord give me another son. It's not enough. Envy never sees enough. There's never enough. I'm always wanting more, always needing more. And so she's wanting God to give her another son. And eventually, God did, but it cost her her life. Turn over to chapter 35. Genesis chapter 35 and verses 16 through 20. She gets pregnant again with the last son, but this is the death of her. She said earlier, give me a son or I will die. Well, she got a son. And then she got the second one, and then she did die as a result. Verse 16. Then they journeyed from Bethel, and when there was still some distance to go to Ephrath, Rachel began to give birth, and she suffered severe labor. When she was in severe labor, the midwife said to her, do not fear, for now you have another son. You got what you wanted, another son, at the cost of your life. It came about as her soul was departing, that she died, that she called him Ben-Oni, which is sorrow, but his father called him Benjamin, son of my right hand. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is, Bethlehem. So after these years of competition, years of not loving his wife Leah and loving Rachel, now his beloved wife is dead, leaving him two sons, and the oldest of those two sons, Joseph, as we're going to see, becomes the favorite. And so what we see is that these boys are growing up in a house full of hatred and envy and resentment. And as James said, that's going to lead to murder, or at least attempted murder. They grew up in, they were weaned by a mother who taught them and expelled over on them her jealousy, her envy. And so it was planted in their hearts, so that they could not love their brother. Now that was, Jacob started it. Well, Laban started it, but Jacob just really made things bad. And then, after his beloved Rachel died, he made it worse. In Genesis chapter 37. In Genesis chapter 37, we're told that Joseph was his clear favorite. In Genesis chapter 37, verse 2, these are the records of the generations of Jacob. And I want you to notice what it says about Joseph and his relationship to his brothers. Joseph, when 70 years of age, was pasturing the flock of his brothers while he was still a youth, along with the sons of Bilhah, the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought back a bad report about them to their father. So Joseph is a tattletale. All right, raise your hand if you like tattletales. Parents kind of do but don't. you know, if they're, one child's doing something bad, but really bad, they want the other one to come and let them know. But, you know, if, you know, when they say, well, Will looked at me bad, looked at me mean, you don't want to hear that over and over every day. You know, but that's kind of what they did. But Joseph comes home and tells Dad, my brothers, they're just nasty old boys and they're misbehaving. And so they get in trouble. But I want you to notice what verse 3 says. Now Israel, or that is Jacob, loved Joseph more than all his sons. So take the first 10, and they count as one. Joseph counts as one, and he loved him more than all the other 10 combined. His love was that much greater for Joseph, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a multicolored tunic. Now, I want you to begin noticing how these brothers are taking this in. They've already been raised to be be mad perhaps at their dad, but be really hateful of Joseph as it is. Verse 4, his brother saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, and so they hated him and could not speak to him on friendly terms. All right, so now the dad's playing favoritism. So now you have open favoritism. Joseph's making it very clear, Jacob's making it very clear that Joseph is his favorite son. All the rest of you, you know, you're good boys, but here's my Joseph. He's my favorite. I love him more than all of you put together. Even if he never said that, it was quite obvious. They knew it. It was very clear. Then, not only did Joseph make things worse by being a tattletale, he begins to have some dreams. And as he has these dreams, he tells his brother, and as he tells the brother, we don't know from the text whether or not he's, you don't like me? Let me tell you about my dream I had. You know, kind of in-your-face kind of attitude. We don't know if that was his attitude or if he was just naive and thought, hey, I had this great dream. I'm going to share this dream with you, the beginning of verse 5. Then Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. Whatever his intention was, it didn't go over well. Verse 6, he said to them, please listen to this dream which I have had. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf rose up and also stood erect. And behold, your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to my sheaf. Then his brothers said to him, are you actually going to reign over us? Are you really going to rule over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Verse 9, now he had still another dream. And he related it to his brothers and said, lo, I have had still another dream. And behold, the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me. He told it to his father and to his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you've had? Shall I and your mother and your brothers actually come to bow ourselves down before you to the ground? And here we are in verse 11. His brothers were jealous of him. They were envious, but his father kept the same in mind. And so you have this the cause of their envy is rooted in their raising at the feet of their mom, who was so angry at her sister and jealous of her sister because her husband loved her sister more than her. Now it's compounded by this favorite son of the favorite wife, and the open display of favoritism, and these boys cannot stand their brother. They hate him even more, and they're just filled with envy and bitterness. And so that leads us to the cost. What did this cost? What was the cost of all of this envy and bitterness? Well, that begins in verse 12 here in Genesis 37. And here's the story was, the boys were out tending sheep. Joseph was back home with his father. And dad sent him to check on his brothers. Verse 12. Then his brothers went to pasture their father's flock in Shechem. Israel, or that is Jacob. Jacob's name had been changed to Israel. Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers pasturing the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send you to them. And he said to him, I will go. In verse 14, then he said to him, go now and see about the welfare of your brothers and the welfare of the flock, and bring word back to me. So go and tell me what they're doing, what they're up to. And so he went to find his brothers. And you think, well, all right, how is this going to go? What's going to happen when he finds his brothers? Is it going to go well? Well, I think you know the story, right? Yeah, you know the story. It doesn't go well. When the brothers saw him coming, And of course, they could not miss the coat. We find out their murderous intent. In fact, they jump straight to the idea of killing him. And so, as we read at the beginning of the service, James is right. Envy leads to murder. We're in chapter 37. Let's read verses 18 to 20. When they saw him from a distance, and before he came close to them, they plotted against him to put him to death. All right, we'll show Dad. We'll show you and all your dreams. Verse 20, they said to one another, "Here comes the dreamer. Now then, come and let us kill him and throw him into the pits, and we will say, 'A wild beast devoured him.' Then let us see what will become of his dream. He thinks he's going to rule over us. We'll show him. We'll kill him. We'll murder him." Now, thankfully, Reuben, the oldest, had some sense. And even though he didn't stop them completely, he said, "Wait a minute. Let's not kill him. Let's just throw him in a pit." Verse 21. But Reuben heard this and rescued him out of their hands and said, let us not take his life. He said further, "Shed no blood. Don't be a murderer of your own brother. Throw him into the pit that is in the wilderness, but do not lay hands on him." Now, I don't know what he told them that the reason to do that was, but other than to not kill him, maybe they thought they'd just leave him there and let him die on his own. But Reuben had a different intent. Reuben says at the end of verse 22 that he might rescue him out of their hands to restore him to his father. So Reuben, no matter how angry he might have been, no matter how envious he might have been, he knew better than to kill his brother. And he was not going to join in their plot to kill him. And so he stopped them from doing what they intended to do immediately. And they put him in the pit. So they captured him and threw him in the pit. But before he could come rescue him, some traitors came along and the brothers sold Joseph into slavery. But I want you to notice something here in the text. Verse 25. Verse 24 says, "And they took him and threw him in the pit. Now the pit was empty without any water in it. Then they sat down to eat a meal." How cold-blooded, how hard-hearted do you have to be to throw your brother in a pit? And he's screaming and crying and begging and pleading for them to let me out, get me out, get me out, or whatever else he's shouting to them. And they're sitting there eating and probably laughing at him and telling him to shut up, you little punk. And you know, that's what we would say today. I'm sure, I don't know if they use the word punk in the Hebrew, but anyway. Yeah, there was just this hard heart, cold heart. James is right. Envy leads to murder. And then they sold him into slavery, and we know the story. They sold him into slavery, and he gets carried off, and we're not going to talk about what all happened in Egypt. That's not the point of this lesson. Not only did they sit there and eat a meal, probably laughing at him, then they have to drag him out and hand him over to the slave traders. Hard-hearted, cold-hearted, envy. And we know that Reuben, when he came back, would just tore his robes. He was just distraught over the fact, "What have you done selling Joseph?" And so then they come up with the idea of, "We'll take his coat, we'll tear it up, and we'll pour blood on it, and we'll go back and tell Dad we found this coat." And they walk into their dad and say, "Hey, Dad, we found this coat. And it's been torn up. And it's got blood over it. Do you think maybe this is Joseph's coat?" Envy drives people to do insane things. And imagine Jacob's broken heart on seeing the bloody coat and hearing their fake news of the possible death of his favorite son. And then imagine 25 years of separation, with the father's mourning, thinking that his son is dead, and the brother's guilt of living the lie. And you remember the story where they go down and they have to go down to get food, and then they're in trouble down there, and they're all arguing with each other and blaming each other. See, this is what happens because we did this to our brother. This is the punishment we get. So they've been carrying this guilt for decades. Jealousy creates all kinds of problems between people and within people's hearts. And that guilt was strong enough so that at the end of the book of Genesis, in chapter 50, after their dad dies, they cook up a plan. They say, you know what? Now that dad's dead, Joseph's going to get his revenge. He didn't get his revenge on us because he was concerned about Benjamin and he was concerned about his dad. But now that dad's dead, he is going to take it out on us and we're going to pay for what we did all those years ago. And so they created the story and said, dad made us make you promise that you won't harm us. And Joseph was just, I think Joseph was brokenhearted by this. Doesn't say it in the text, but I think he had to be. Verse 19 of Genesis chapter 50. All right, actually go back to verse 17. Verse 17. Thus you shall say, please forgive, I beg you, the transgression. So there, this is the story they made up to Joseph that their dad said. I beg you the transgression of your brothers and for their sin, for they did you wrong. And now please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. They were carrying this guilt. And Joseph had let it go long, long, long years before. In verse 18, in fulfillment of the dreams, they had already been fulfilled anyway, but in further fulfillment of the dreams, then his brothers also came down and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. What about your dreams, boy? Here's your dreams being fulfilled. We are your servants. But notice what Joseph says. Joseph said to them, do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? And then he says, our conclusion is that God used this for good. Verse 20, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. So therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and for your little ones. So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. Envy. Envy. Decades of misery and pain and suffering, all because of envy that began before they were even born and was passed down to them as a legacy to carry with them for all these years. Envy is an evil thing. But thankfully, God can use that to his end. They intended it for evil. They had no interest in trying to help Joseph. They were trying to harm him, but God saved him. And through that, saved many, including us. Because it was by virtue of him being there in place to save the nation, or for to save his family, that then went into Egypt and became the nation of Israel. And through Jesus, the descendant of Judah, the descendant of Jacob, we can be freed from the trap and the sin of guilt, and the guilt of envy and jealousy as well. Let's wrap up with three takeaways. We're going to look, first of all, at the idea of putting others first. How do we overcome envy? How do we not get trapped by envy? Because there will be situations, as I pointed out, even in my own life, where envy can come up and cause us to just really lose our minds in a certain way. Well, the first thing is we just need to learn to put others first. And that is not easy. It is a very difficult thing to do, to force ourselves to put others first. To decide that whatever is good for you is more important than what I want. And that's difficult to do. But imagine the difference if Leah had been able to say, he doesn't love me, but I'm going to live with that. I'm going to be okay with it because I don't want my children to grow up hating their father and hating their brothers and the family. What they need is to show love and respect more than I need to express my anger and my frustration. Put others first. It's hard to do. Because we look out for number one. All right. Second thing is, prepare to share. Prepare to share. Joseph demonstrated that by virtue of the work that he did in preparing the nation to share with the world, to save them, and then share with his brothers. But get a mindset that says, I'm going to share. Rachel wanted her husband and she wanted his children. Leah wanted to have the love of her husband and was not willing to share that, and just really built up this well of envy that spilled over on her children. Prepare to share. Prepare to share and start with love. One of the things that really makes a church family grow and become an example of Christian love is to love one another. And that requires us thinking about each other and caring about each other. And I appreciate the expressions of love that you showed to me earlier today. Prepare to share, especially love. And then practice goodwill. Just be good-hearted toward people. Determine that no matter what, no matter what they do, no matter what people say, you're going to accept, you're going to demonstrate goodwill to them. That's going to be your practice. Now, when we say practice, that means sometimes we're going to fail, and we're going to fall, and we're going to stumble. But goodwill toward others is going to be our general practice and outlook on life. That's how we overcome the shame of envy. Well, go ahead and get your songbooks out. As we think about this idea of, has envy consumed us? Think about the things in your life. Think about the things that other people have. Do you look at things that other people have and wish you had it and they didn't? Maybe it's the affection or attention of others. Maybe it's the idea that you know, you just have more they're more popular than you. This can be a problem at school or at work, or in a church even. Everybody likes so and so. Nobody likes me. Don't go that way. Don't go there. And if you go there, come back. Turn away from it. Turn away from it, and remember. Do something about it. So if envy is a problem, what are you doing about it? You're going to throw it at the feet of Jesus and say, help me overcome this. Help me put this aside. If you're not a Christian, you need to become one tonight. But if you're a Christian who has let envy into your heart, get rid of it. And maybe if you need the encouragement of the brothers and sisters here, let them practice goodwill and show how to love by encouraging you to be better and to overcome it. If you're struggling in any way tonight, if we can help you be right with God, please come while we stand and while we sing.